today by Leila Schneps, and the title is, at least in the as I recorded it, because I think it was in French and I took the liberty to translate it, but I don't know what is an adequate translation. So, Olympic double shuffle in cosmos.
Yes, that's still a good title. So, I have to thank you for bringing me to this lovely place that I never visited before and organizing rainy weather while I needed to concentrate. And sunny weather after I'm done. Okay, so what I'm going to do in my talk today is, first I'm going to give the outline of the talk. And it's very closely related to the talk by Benjamin Riquet yesterday. So actually I'm going to cover much of the same ground, maybe slightly differently, but with a different emphasis. The first thing I'll do is, I'll put a diagram on the board. Yesterday Benjamin put a diagram on the board also first, with many circles and lines, and I'll put a similar diagram, but mine is a real commutative diagram with spaces and arrows. And then I'll give the outline of what I'm going to do in the talk. So here's a diagram that basically covers it. And I think every object in the diagram, or maybe everyone but one, was in the talk of yesterday. About the genus zero situation, which is in this top line. But only quickly, because you know them already, I think mostly, and Benjamin has talked about them yesterday. The second part I will talk about, the second line, which is the genus one situation. The vertical arrows are all passing from genus zero to genus one. Each of the arrows in this diagram is the fruit of a lot of work and difficult theorem by many different people, I think I'll leave this here and fill it out as I go along and explain. Okay, so the first thing I'll do is some just quick recalling the genus zero situation. So it's important to give a few definitions even though they're already familiar, because all of these spaces, well, especially these two spaces, are subspaces of the 3D algebra of two generators. And it makes it easy to express the map between them. So this is the famous pentagon relation with the indices just circled 3, 3, 4, 5 terms, 5, 1, 2, where these xij are generators of, this thing is a killer.
Well.
Of the braid Lie algebra of 5 strand. Lie braid 5. Okay, so maybe lots of people know. What they look like is the braids in the braid group, and these are the generators of the corresponding braid. So, an important remark about this GRT that maybe everybody already knows. It was defined by Drinfeld originally. There were three relations, relations 1, 2, and 3. The first two relations could be stated directly in this free Lie algebra, but the third relation, you have to go into the Lie braid algebra to state it. And it was a theorem by H. Fulucho, here present. Okay, well, when he was, I don't know, 19 or something, you mentioned to me the relation 3 replied relation 1.
I'm not 19, no.
Okay. You looked 19. Relation 3 implied relation 1 is trivial, but no one had ever noticed. And relation 3 implied relation 2 is was difficult and interesting, and in fact, if I remember right, came from your looking at a soccer ball in which hexagons surround the pentagon. Okay, so now it's a much simpler and better definition for many purposes with just the one relation. Then we have double shuffle. I'll tell you why it's a Lie algebra, I'll tell you the bracket in a minute. First I'll introduce double shuffle, they have the same bracket. So after I've introduced the double shuffle as a space, I'll just remind you what the bracket is, even though I think most people know. So double shuffle is also elements in... This property here of being a Lie polynomial is called the shuffle property. It can be expressed more explicitly as a property of the coefficients of F satisfying a shuffle relation. So this is known as the shuffle, and then there's a second shuffle. Double shuffle means you have the shuffle and then the shuffle. There's a second shuffle property. So I don't need to go into it in detail, so I'm going to give the simplest definition. There are many, many equivalent definitions of this property, and since I'm not actually going to use it technically in the talk, I'll give the simplest one. From my F, I create an element F star by first, I take F, and I forget all, it's a polynomial in X and Y, non-commutative variables. I just forget all the monomials ending in X. I keep only all the monomials ending in Y. So this is projection to monomials ending in Y. And then I add a little correction term here. This notation here just means the coefficient of a monomial in this polynomial. This is the coefficient function. Okay, and now what I have is, I have another polynomial in X and Y that I obtained in a very simple way from this polynomial. But this polynomial has a property that all the words end in Y. And so I rewrite this F star in variables Y I, which is X to the I minus 1. I can do it because all the words end in Y, so I can rewrite it in these variables. And then I have co-product delta star defined by, on the yi's, k plus l equals I, yk plus l yl. So I simply ask that Lie-like just means this is f star tensor 1 plus 1 tensor f star. Okay, I'm reminding you of this definition for purposes of situating the double shuffle. There are many equivalent and more practical ways you can give this condition directly as a similar to shuffle type condition on the coefficients of F. But I don't want to get into it for several reasons, one of which is there's a condition in terms of Mohl's equivalent that's simpler to state. And the other is I'm not going to use this condition at all. I'm soon going to move to the elliptic situation where I don't need this anymore. So this is just a brief reminder. Anyway, it was noticed that these two... let me give you the bracket. Now I'm just going to remind you quickly of the bracket, which is a Poisson bracket, a vector field type Poisson bracket, also called the Ihara bracket. So to every F in der Lie, Lie xy, just moving into French for some reason, for every F in Lie xy, associate df in der, the derivations of Lie xy, defined by df of x is 0, df of y is yf, y bracket f. Then I have the bracket of derivations, and this defines a new bracket on Lie xy, on the vector space Lie xy, which I can write explicitly, but I run out of room. I'll write it very small. This bracket here is just the normal bracket of f and g plus df of g minus dg of f. And that's a trivial computation, just calculating the image of this derivation. So what I have here is I have another bracket that I can put on this vector space. And I'm going to call that the algebra L. It's the same with this other bracket. And Ihara showed that under that bracket, this is a Lie algebra. And Hasine showed that under the same bracket, this is in the algebra. So this is Hasine thesis in 2000, and this is much earlier. And there's another proof of this theorem that I'll give you later by Eckel, which is a long time ago also, which is like gathering the low-hanging fruit on a rather large tree. But I'm going to be able to introduce Eckel's main theorem later on, and it's a very powerful and useful theorem, and this is like a corollary.
So Ihara is earlier than Drinfeld?
Maybe 1990, 1991.
I always thought this was due to Drinfeld, the famous Drinfeld papers, including the bracket and all.
I think they were working at the same time on this Lie algebra, and possibly Ihara even earlier on this Lie algebra.
He made his own research.
Okay. Mm.
But maybe even before Drinfeld.
You can find
a
paper in Mozambique Institute.
Okay.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, but there's no French at all.
Okay,
without
Ihara's.
Okay, I'm almost finished with the top line. I just have to add a few more words to finish recalling the genus zero situation. Why do we call it genus zero, by the way? As long as you look directly at double shuffle, you don't see any topology or anything that looks remotely like genus zero. The genus zero sort of framework for this top line comes from here, because this is the Lie algebra associated to the Gothen-Dietrich-Müller group that we heard about previously, which acts on braid groups which are fundamental groups of moduli spaces of genus zero curves with marked points. And also, this category of mixed Tate motives that I'll talk about just a little bit in a minute is based on P1 minus 3 points, also genus zero situation. Okay, anyway, it was observed that if F psi, from now on I'm gonna write psi is in GRT, and if you set F equals psi x minus y, then F is in double shuffle. So this is something that was, the thing that's beautiful is that you can calculate these Lie algebras in small weight. They're graded by weight, by degree of the polynomial. And so you can calculate, especially it's easy to calculate this. This one you have to go and calculate in the Lie algebra, so now Doyle has a good program for this. But it's a bit heavy. But anyway, you can calculate these polynomials in small weight, and this was observed for some time in small weights. It seemed incredible because the definitions are so different. And finally, this turned into a theorem. Again by Furusho. That this actually gives an injective map. They're practically the same space. That is, we don't know if DS is bigger or not bigger. We really believe it's the same space. I mean, people have done calculations now on some large weight like 20, and they really seem to be the same space. And personally, I really believe they're the same space, but it's not known. But the fact is that if you satisfy the pentagon, then you satisfy double shuffle. So what we have now here is the Lie algebra structures on this and this, and now I just want to talk a little bit about this, but not much. I'm not going to go very much into the motivic aspect, but NTM is the category of mixed Tate motives. It's a Kanakian category. So it has a Tanakhian fundamental group. Tanakhian fundamental group has a pro-unipotent radical, which simply, actually, it's completely understood, it's actually pro-unipotent group semi-direct with just the multiplicative group. The pro-unipotent radical is U, and this U is well understood, because its Lie algebra is free with one generator in each odd rank, S5, S7, and so on. It's a well understood Lie algebra. Now, what...
You should say MTM of Z.
Yes, MTM.
It's really integral.
Wait.
Otherwise, it's not true.
Unramified over Z. Okay, so to complete this picture, I'm going to put in here well, I'm all right, I'll just explain it. It turns out, by a theorem due to Gottscharoff and Brown, that this category is entirely made of something called motivic multiple zeta values. So without defining them, let me just give some indications. So what Gottscharoff did is he showed there's a category inside this category. What Brown did is he showed they're equal. So what Gottscharoff did is he defined motivic zetas inside. Let me put a symbol here. So I use MZ for something slightly different after. So what is a mixtape motive? What is one of these elements? Well, because this is a Tanakian category with this Tanakian fundamental group, you can see it if you want, it's the category of representations of that group. And what you need to give yourself explicitly a motive like this is you give yourself a representation of that group. So you give yourself a vector space and you have to show that it carries a representation of this group. And Gottscharoff defined a motivic multiple zeta indexed by N1 and R. Let me just take a little interlude here. You know what? Before I just say what Gottscharoff did, I'm going to remind you just, I know you all know, but let me write here what the real multiple zetas are. These are real numbers, and they generate an algebra, a Q algebra, that I'm going to call Z. So he defined, for each one of these, he defined one that's motivic, maybe I'll use K, they're the same, which is a vector space, which is actually constructed as the cohomology of a moduli space, and showed that it really is a mixtape motive. And he is, Okay, so he did this, and then using a beautiful result due to maybe valence and original, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but this is the result. When you have a category of motives like this, you associate to each motive in your category a framing is just choosing basically a differential form and a thing to integrate your differential form over. And you have framed motives, and you have an equivalence relation between the framed motives, and the theorem says the following. An equivalence relation between the framed motives. The theorem says, if you take the set of equivalence classes of framed motives, you get a Hopf algebra. So, equivalence classes of framed motives. So these are very like the motives, they just have something extra attached to them. It's isomorphic, not only isomorphic to a Hopf algebra, but isomorphic to a very particular Hopf algebra, which is nothing other than the dual of the enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra of the pro-unipotent radical of the fundamental Tanakian fundamental group of the category itself. So it's like a circle. On the one hand, you start with your category and you take its fundamental group, the pro-unipotent radical, the Lie algebra, the universal enveloping algebra, and the dual of that. Or you go the other way. You take your category, you take the elements, you frame them, you take equivalence classes, and you come to the same thing. So it's a kind of circular way to do the same thing. So this is what's called MZ, equals the Hopf algebra of framed motivic multivariate values.
So, my heart is, so here is it the co-product, right, the main thing, because it indicates this non-commutative nature of the story, right, because the product is still kind of commutative, right?
Yes, the product is commutative. This is a commutative. Have a rich structure. So because of Goncharov's construction of this category inside that category, you get this inclusion of the Haupt algebras. Maybe before putting the inclusion, I'll just give Brown's theorem, because that way it gives an isomorphism, so I can't get it wrong. Theorem. So this is Brown's big theorem. I could say it in two different ways. I could say that Mz is equal to Mtm. That is, this subcategory is the whole category. The whole of mixed state motives is filled up by typical multiples and values. Or, which is a consequence or equivalent, Mz is isomorphic to U, Li, S3, S5, etc. duo. These two are equivalent. Two equivalent statements of the same sum.
Wait, or rather Mtm is equivalent to...
Mz with a twiddle, which is just the motives, fills up the whole of the category Mtm.
Yeah, but what is Mz?
Mz is this associated Haupt algebra that you get by taking this, framing them, and taking equivalence classes. You get the associated Haupt algebra. And that is isomorphic to this. Since Mz is now the whole category, this associated Haupt algebra is now this Haupt algebra. Does that make sense?
Not to me. I find it slightly confusing because, like, you're saying that before, right? Goncharov said that...
Goncharov said that this was inside there.
Yes. And it was equal. What was inside was equal to this U.
Brown proved that these two are equal.
Right. But then I would state the equivalence statement as Mtmz is equal to U, V, or not.
No, that's always true, right? Mtmz is equal to... Mtmz with... The Mtmz, maybe I should write a twiddle here or something.
Yeah.
Then Mtmz would be the associated Haupt algebra. Before Brown, before anything to do with multiple zetas, this is always true. This is just a general situation of Dernackian categories. Mtmz, the associated Haupt algebra, is isomorphic to this. Without any relation to multiple
zetas. You mean to establish what is U, or what is Li of
U? U is this. In the case of Mtmz. So if you forget Mz, forget motivic zetas, forget them completely, then we're in a situation where we have this category, we have the associated Haupt algebra, which I could call Mtm, the alpha twiddle. It's not a very good notation. Actually, people usually write it more like this. But okay, that's life. This, by this result here, is equal to the dual of the universal unbundling algebra of this. No need to mention motivic multiple zeta values to state. But now, because of Brown, you can actually not only mention motivic multiple zeta values, you can say this is true of motivic. You can forget Mtm now. You can just speak of motivic multiple zeta values. And motivic multiple zeta values, because of the framing, this thing is framed by, remember I said it's a differential form and something you integrate over. And the differential form, now I need to erase. This is what we saw yesterday, quickly. In Benjamin's talk, the framing of this is given by the simplex that people integrate over and the differential form that you integrate where I just have to tell you what the tuple epsilon 1 up to epsilon n is. Epsilon 1 epsilon n is equal to many zeros and a 1, many zeros and a 1, where the number of zeros is k1 minus 1 up to kr minus 1. So I give myself this motif with the numbers k1, kr. I write down this tuple. It's of length n, which is the sum of the ki's. I call those epsilons, and now all these epsilons are either 1 or 0, and the framing of the motif is this and this. And the period of the motive is what happens when you integrate the integral over the thing. So you integrate this, t1, tn1, as Benjamin did yesterday, and what you get is you get the real multiple zeta value. It's called the period. These motivic multiple zetas have periods that are just the real multiple zeta values. And, okay, so now we know what this is. Now we know that this here is operate on each arm rack. And that there's a... Don Sharaf also showed that these motivic multiple theta values satisfy the associative relations. The associative relations are the relations defining this, except... let's say the fact that they satisfy the associative relations, which I will not write down, implies this inclusion on the level of the Lie algebras. So this comes from Don Sharaf. Okay, so all of this is showing relations that I haven't gone into yet of between the top line of the diagram and multiple zeta values. All I've done so far with multiple zeta values is define them. I haven't said anything about them. I've just said something about the motivic multiple zeta values. But Benjamin said something about them yesterday, which I'll just very quickly recall, and that will end my genus zero. Oops. Okay, so the real multiple zeta values satisfy many algebraic relations. We heard about this yesterday. So, first, okay, shuffle, the satisfied shuffle relations. Let me say what that means quickly. It's worth saying what this means. First, I'm going to define zeta w for all words W in XY. If W is of the form XK1 minus 1Y, XKR minus 1Y, then theta W is just theta K1 KR. But if it's not, if I have a Y in front, and then a word like this, and then an X in the back, then theta W, there's a simple formula, on the right, little by little, and I shuffle them into what remains of this word. And here I get a sum of words. When you shuffle, I sum up the words in the shuffle. Here I get a very long sum of words, and all the non-convergent words actually go away. And I remain with only convergent words, and formally when I write zeta of a sum of words, I mean the sum of zeta of those words. And so what this formula is zeta of a bad word as a linear combination of good words of this type. So this regularization procedure comes from an explicit calculation of a normal regularization procedure, which means I take a non-convergent integral of the kind I wrote before about where the first epsilon wouldn't be 1 and the last epsilon wouldn't be 0, and I integrate it over something near the boundary and then I take a limit. But the explicit formula that says something like this, I think maybe it also due to Fourier. In this explicit.
You have to take a projection to Pi, right?
Yeah, actually, I always thought you had to take a projection to convergent words. But then I think Von Schmidt told me that you don't, because somehow.
Because you have to define that number one, you always assume that.
Well, I'll put it in for safety, but somehow Von Schmidt convinced me that with the signs, all the bad words go away, and you actually don't need the projection. But for safety, let me put in here this Pi, which means I only take the good words and I just forget the bad words. But check it sometime.
Yeah.
In a talk in Madrid, maybe you were there, Von Schmidt said, you don't need this because with the signs, the bad ones, they go away.
Yeah.
Something to check. I never checked. Anyway, zeta of W shuffle W prime is theta of W prime. With this definition where I'm shuffling the two words together. And these are the shuffle relations satisfied by zetas. And then I have this zeta of W star, or maybe I should, well, yeah, W star W prime is theta of W prime. Where the star, so for all words W, W prime in the variables yi, so ending in y. Here I only consider words ending in y to write this relation down. I don't consider any words ending in x for this one. And this is the stuffle. This relation comes just from taking the associated expression as a power series, multiplying two of them, and adding up the different pieces. Like this, for instance, zeta of 2, zeta of 2, 1 over n squared, n is greater than 0, n is greater than 0, 1 over n squared. So I have all to sum up over n greater than 0 and n greater than 0. So I just sum over n greater than n, n greater than n, and n equals 0. And it gives me the stuffle relations between these two, which again, I'm not going to go into because I don't need them. I'm just bringing this up because the dual of these two relations are exactly these relations. The dual of these two relations, mod product. So here I'm working in an algebra. If I take that algebra, modulo products, I'm working in a vector space. And the dual of these two relations, which is this equals 0 and n equals 0, are exactly these relations. I'm pointing out that these relations are motivated. They come from actual relations that are known between multi-zeta values. And the big conjecture on multi-zeta values would be that they only satisfy these relations, that these generate all possible algebraic relations between these objects. Okay, so this is important to say that double shuffle is a way of studying this family of very important conjecturally complete family of algebraic relations on multi-zeta values. So now I'll move to genus 1. So this is all very recent now, the second line. This is all very old. This is all very recent. The move from genus 0 to genus 1, these three vertical arrows here, they were done independently by different people, completely different people, without talking to each other at all. So, Hain and Matsumoto, this I'm not going to go into the motivic aspect at all, but about, you heard about some of it yesterday from Najana, constructed the category of mixed elliptic motives. And the only thing I'm going to say about what they proved is they determined the following results. The following results on what I call Li Pi 1 of MEM. What do I mean by this? MEM is a Tanakian category. It has a Tanakian fundamental group. You take the pro-uniform radical, you take the Lie algebra of that, just like I did before. Li Pi 1 of MEM suggests canonically to Li Pi 1 of NTM. Let what they call U ice, this is for Eisenstein, be the kernel. There is a geometric section. Geometric means coming from an actual base, tangential base point at infinity on the genus 1 moduli space, on the moduli space of genus 1 with one mark point, which is just the moduli space that makes the curve. Fundamental domain. Which comes from the fact that when you take a torus with one mark point and you degenerate a curve on it, you end up with something in genus 0. You end up with not only something in genus 0, but something genus 0 with three marked points. You're in the P1 minus 3-point situation, which brings you back to here. There is many sections, as always, of course, but there's a very particular one associated to that tangential base point that they study, which, in fact, as a conclusion, leads to the fact that this is a semi-direct product. And the last result is this morphism here, that there's a representation of this Lie algebra into the derivations of the free Lie algebra and two generators, which I call A and B. Because this is not to be confused mentally with Lie of XY. This is the Lie algebra of the fundamental group of the once punctured torus, where Lie XY, that was being used up here, is the Lie algebra of the fundamental group of the three punctured sphere. And there's going to be, we're going to heavily use a certain geometrically motivated morphism from one into the other to connect these two things. Okay? So they show that there is a representation here. They conjecture it's injective, but they don't know, but it is injective on the MTM part. That's known already. What they don't know is if it's injective on the U part, but they do calculate the image of U. So I can add Li Pi 1 MTM semi-direct U here, and this U, it maps surjectively to a certain algebra B3 that I'm about to define. But they conjecture it's injective, but we don't know. B3 is a very, very important algebra inside the derivations, which Benjamin defined yesterday. I'll just recall the definition. It's generated by derivations epsilon 2i for I greater than or equal to 0, and I different from 1, where epsilon 2i of A is add A to the 2i of B, so just bracket A with B, and epsilon 2i of B of bracket AB is 0. So this determines the action on B uniquely with a simple formula that I don't write down, but it's determined. And the only reason we exclude this one is because it happens to be central and commute with everybody and not play a role. We could actually include E2, epsilon 2, but we don't need it. Epsilon 0 is very important. I think that Benjamin called this delta, but maybe the indices are shifted by 2 or something. This is the notation used by Hei Matsumoto and especially their student, Aaron Pollack, who studied this algebra very closely and determines a very, very interesting elements of its structure and relations between the brackets of these derivations. Okay, so there's a conjecture that we understand that Ui is isomorphic to B3, but we don't know. So that was one approach to moving to genus 1. The second approach to moving to genus 1 is completely different. It comes from observing, which was long, long ago due to Ihara, that GRT is equal to that it's inside der Li XY. We saw that already by F goes to DF. But in fact, there's more. It's equal to special derivations, I won't define them, it's just a certain set of derivations whose properties he gave explicitly, of Li braid 5. And in fact, even n for all n. 5 is the key point. When you calculate the special derivations of Li braid 5, you find that it's GRT. But if you actually put n here as the same GRT, it never changes, it stabilizes from then on. So
Symmetric.
I was using the word special in non-technical sense. Okay. Special particular derivations. Okay.
Well, I think sooner or later it's going to be symmetric. You need something much, much, much weaker. Mm-hmm.
So it's natural Give
which
it?
Was? Gina Stone?
Maybe she was three.
Given. So it's natural. Given that. Okay, to study special in non-technical sense, certain special particular derivations of genus 1 Brady algebras. Now I won't give them by generator simulations. Because it's well, I won't give the relations, because that's what I gave them yesterday. They're generated by x1 plus xn plus and x1 minus xn minus, and the usual Braid algebra, and g to 0, t0n, embeds into here with the xij's that I had before going to xi plus bracket xj. So genus 0 embeds into genus 1 as it happens topologically. Okay, and what, so now I'm talking about work that was done by Enriquez to define the GRTL, which you saw yesterday. So roughly speaking, GRTL, I'll give the explicit definition first, but first I'm going to say where it's coming from. And actually, let me say that it was discovered independently by Tsunogai. Yes, also we actually gave an almost identical same definition. And what they were doing was, they were considering the derivations of T1, 2. Now the genus 1 Braid group on two strands. One of the relations here is x1 plus xn, x1 is equal 0. There are many relations, but here's one of them, which means when n equals 2, the sum of the two is 0. So actually you only need x1 plus and x1 minus. There are only two derivatives, it's free. This is just the free Lie algebra on two generators. It's the one I'm talking about calling it the AB. So they're taking derivations of this, and they're looking at those which extend to T13. I will write down the exact formulas. Extend in a certain way, not extend in any old way. Maybe I can write down, maybe some of this will be less. Let's say the derivation that I have here is x1 plus goes to alpha plus, x1 minus goes to alpha minus. This is a derivation. If I give you the image of these two, I've given you the derivation. How does it extend to this? You have to use this notation. Did you do this yesterday? This? Okay, let me just... I'm not going to write down everything. I'm just going to give an idea. You extend it with particular formulas. And here, God, don't write them, because they might be wrong. Here's a psi up. Okay. I'm not going to get into it. It's too complicated. Instead, let me just say, an element of GRTL is a triple psi alpha plus alpha minus with psi in GRT. It gives the derivation of this simply by the two generators go to alpha plus and alpha minus. So alpha plus and alpha minus just are in Lie AB, which is the same as Lie x1 plus x1 minus. The same thing. And that extends to a derivation of T13 in a particular way. The formulas are not beautiful. They involve lots of alpha plus, alpha minus, and psi, so I won't write them down. But the idea comes from just the same idea as what you have had in genus 0. They are derivations of the easy thing, but then extends to the more complicated great thing. Okay. So now what Benjamin proved about GRTL is... No, I need more room. I have to erase. Maybe I can use this. So So I wrote down the main results that Hayden Matsumoto proved on their Li Pi 1 of MEM, and now I'll write down the useful things that Benjamin proved about GRTL. Maybe I won't be phrasing them in a way that he doesn't recognize too well, so, but they're just rephrasing it. So, first of all, there exists a surjection, GRTL to GRT, just by psi alpha plus alpha minus goes to psi. Okay, but much more importantly, well, he says let RL denote the kernel. And here are the two really important results. One, B3 belongs to RL. In fact, nobody has ever found any elements of RL that are not in B3. It looks very much like it is B3. So you see, well, they have a semi-direct product that goes down to B3. Their thing surjects down to B3, whereas in his case, B3 ejects into his algebra. And the second is that there is a section, which I'll call gamma, from GRT back up to GRTL. I thought I would have enough room to write the theorem, but I don't. I'll erase this. I'm going to give you the section explicitly, the way he gives it. So gamma of psi is going to be one of these triples, psi alpha plus alpha minus, where alpha plus and alpha minus can be determined explicitly from the following formulas. Now, when I say determined explicitly, well, I'll say something about what that means. From, let me call this psi. Please psi in der me. First, he says psi acts on e to the b. I'll tell you what these TIs are in a moment. They're very important. And then he says psi of T02 is this. Now, these T01, T02, and T12, they're very important elements of Li AB. Both Hei Matsumoto and Enriquez use the same map. This is the way to go on the level of Li algebras from genus 0 to genus 1. You send x to t01, y to t02, and x plus y to, well, minus x minus y, to t12, so the sum of the three is 0, where t01 is bare b of minus a, bare minus b of a, t12 is the bracket of a and b. This is the Bernoulli function. For any element x, bare x is add x over e to the add x minus y. Okay, so what are these? What are these T01, T02? They're power series. By the way, when I write VAB, it's complete, always complete. I can have a power series. That's a polynomial in every way, but it's a power series. So this T01, for instance, it starts minus a plus a half bracket ba, I don't remember exactly, plus a 1/12 bba. It's a sum of b's bracketing the a with Bernoulli coefficients in front. This is bn over n factorial at x. Okay, now this is really important. This is at the heart of the passage from genus 0 to genus 1, in fact. Both Hei Matsumoto and for GRT. So now, and Enriquez makes this remark, if you know the result of something acting on E of B, then you can find it on B by manipulations. If you know it on B and of T0, 2, then you know it on A, because A is equal to this operator inverse, which just depends on B, of T0, 2. You know the image on B, you know the image on T0, 2. But that's not a very good formula for calculating anything. But it's determined. It is determined. And in fact, if you have a computer, you can actually determine, you take a little psi in GRT, the first one of weight 3, you can actually determine, these are power series. So you can only determine the beginnings, but you can actually write them down explicitly and see things about them, okay? So notice that he also has, because of this section, a semi-direct product. GRTL is RL semi-direct GRT, where this is really gamma of GRT, it's the section. So I'll write that here, GRT semi-direct RL. And B3 is inside RL. Instead of the surjection down here, you have an injection, right? Because he constructs GRTL as derivations. They're defined to be derivations. So this map, the way Enriquez constructed, is injective, whereas this one, we don't know at all, it's just a representation, it's surjective. And B3 is inside here, whereas there surjects to B3. Conjecturally, everything is B3. Conjecturally, these things are equal. Actually, all this line is conjectured to be equal, and all of this line is conjectured to be equal. So far, we can only just compare the bits and pieces that we know. So we know that this injects into there by the top line, and we know that this surjects to B3, whereas this one contains B3. And we can conjecture they're both equal to B3, and therefore equal, and therefore both. Okay, but we're on to conjectures. So now I've kind of got to the part of the talk that's completely new compared to what. And this might be a good time to have the break. I'm just going to, in the whole second part, what I'm going to do is, let me just say what I'm going to do in the second part. I'm going to concentrate on this. I'm going to define it. I'm going to define an elliptic double shuffle. I'm going to define it using Mohl's theory by Kahl, for which I have to introduce Mohl's theory, which is really fun, so just take the ride, you know, like a, how do you say, funiculaire. And I'm going to show the main theorem, which is the commutativity of this diagram. This arrow here depends on the conjecture that RL is equal to B3. If we believe that, you have this arrow. If we don't believe it, I don't know. But we don't need it to prove that the commutativity of this. I'm going to define all of this and this arrow here, all in terms of modes. These are things that you simply cannot define without using modes. Because in order to define them properly, you've got to leave the world of polynomials. It can't be done if you stay with these polynomials and two variables. And I want to prove the commutation of all of this. And as a very last thing, if I have time, I'd like to come back over what Benjamin mentioned at the end of his talk yesterday with the elliptic associator and a slightly modified version of the elliptic associator and what its defining elliptic double shuffle properties could be.
Thank you. Any questions at this point?
Is there an injection of B3 in DSL?
B3, as I'll say, maps trivially to DSL. Mm. It's completely trivial. Mm. So, if this were just B3, or if we replace the definition by just something smaller, the arrow is obvious. But I can't explain that until I define DSL.
Okay, more questions? Well, no, let's have a coffee break.
Yeah.